You're listening to the Clutter Fairy Weekly, a weekly webcast and podcast brought to you by the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas. If you'd like to participate in one of our live webcasts, please visit cfhou.com/weekly. You'll find a calendar of upcoming webcasts, as well as instructions for joining the Zoom meeting via the app or by phone. We'd love to see you. That URL again is cfhou.com/weekly. Now here's the weekly episode. Enjoy.
Hi, Clutter Fairy fans. This is the Clutter Fairy Weekly for April 30th, 2024. I'm your co-host, Ed Gumnick, and I'm speaking with Gail Goddard, certified professional organizer and owner of the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas.
Hi, everybody. The Clutter Fairy Weekly is the webcast and podcast that digs deep into the clutter that piles up between you and the life you want to be living. We explore the habits and behaviors that lead to clutter, and we suggest strategies to slow the accumulation, reduce the collection, and comfortably manage the stuff we decide to keep.
If you're new to our Zoom meeting, we want to let you know that you can share your comments and questions via the chat feature, and I'll try to make sure Gail addresses them before we move on to another topic. You can also use the raise hand feature if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment yourself via audio or video. And we are streaming the webcast live on Facebook, so you can share your questions and comments there, and I'll relay them to Gail. We're going to start by talking about last week's weekly tittle, which was called Tweak a Problem Area. The assignment was to apply a strategy or solution that we talked about in last week's episode to one of your clutter problem areas. Let's hear from our participants in Zoom and on Facebook, who experimented with putting a new habit, routine, or system in place to corral a problem area this week. Please let us know in the comments. And while we wait for our live audience to chime in with progress reports, I wanted to address a YouTube comment and an issue some viewers are experiencing with our YouTube channel. So a little housekeeping here. YouTube viewer BBBX4DP, I'm not sure how to read that, so I just went straight on through, wrote to us in response to last week's episode, which was entitled Your Best and Your Worst, Household Sweet Spots and Problem Areas. BB wrote, I love Clutter Fairy shows and wish this episode had a more positive title. Your worst, she put in quotes, comes across to me as harsh and judgmental, even though that was not the intent. I know Ed said last week he was hoping to devise a more creative title. I did not come up with a more creative title for that one. Here at the Clutter Fairy, we try hard to steer clear of judgmental language whenever possible. So in normal usage, we'd probably be more inclined to say something like, the areas of your home where your organizing skills shine versus the ones that you find more challenging. For this episode, the emphasis was on the contrast and what we hoped you might learn from it. So I made the judgment call to use that troublesome word worst, mostly in service to cramming the title into the limited number of characters we have to work with. I have to admit, it wasn't our best episode title ever. Best. I should put that in quotation marks.
Right?
Thank you for that feedback, BB, and for keeping me on my toes. Now, the other YouTube thing we wanted to talk about, a few people have called to our attention the weird thing that's going on YouTube right now. YouTube recently offered us the opportunity to publish our podcast feed on YouTube. YouTube is trying to get a piece of the podcasting market, you know, the podcasting audience. And so we turned it on, this capability, and they pick up the feed for our podcast and publish it to YouTube as audio only videos, essentially a still picture where you can hear the audio of the episode. And some people have had confusion about that. They've been sent to the audio only version instead of the video version. I'm not sure how this is all going to play out as YouTube continues with this, their podcasting experiment or adventure, whatever we want to call it. But rest assured, there will always be a video version when we've recorded a webcast. And if you are not on our mailing list, one easy way to make sure that you get get straight to the video version is join our mailing list. Go ahead and hold up the sign for that one, Gail.
Oh, yes.
If you visit cfhou.com/subscribe, you can sign up for our mailing list, and you'll just get, I mean, in the typical week, we send at most two emails, and one of them is telling you we've posted the new YouTube video. So that is one way to avoid any confusion. But thanks for the
The other
feedback.
one of the week is here's our survey for the upcoming show. So you get a survey email and you get an announcement that the video is available email. That's
Right.
what we're doing.
Ron asked, can we rename the podcast version so it says podcast? Unfortunately, we can't, because YouTube basically gives us one or two little inputs. We can tell it, here's where my podcast is published, and do I want to, and does it include any paid advertising? And those are about all the configurable features on the YouTube podcasting thing right now. So our choices are disable this feature or live with it for a little while. So we're going to live with it for a little while, but please let us know if YouTube is recommending the podcast version to you instead of the video. And we will keep this under consideration and figure out what we're going to do going forward. Paula says, I've been pet sitting the last week, looking forward to decluttering cats on keyboards tomorrow. In fact, one is lying on the keyboard now.
Always so helpful.
Rowan reports, I decluttered a chair slash chaise and moved a big fan to our storage porch room.
I can't
Connie
imagine
says,
Rowan has very much left. She's decluttered herself a lot. She is down to the bare minimum everywhere, I think, at this point.
yeah. Connie says, not really the task, but I did declutter the three junk drawers I have in three different places. Found lots
Hey.
of things that belonged elsewhere.
That's a good thing to do because we sort of, they're just like microcosms of scrambolizing. Just little piles of things jumped to tossed into the drawer and made into a big mess, a soup. So it sounds like you picked it apart and that's great and probably got rid of a bunch of stuff in the process. So good job.
Kara says, I do use a timer for 5 minutes to do a quick pickup at any time I think about it, or when things in the living room and office get out of my control. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah, good job. The timer creates that artificial pressure to stay focused and get going on something. And 5 minutes is really fast. So if you can give yourself 5 minutes by a timer and focus in, something gets done. Good for you.
On the subject of best and worst, M says, I think worst is fine because we all use that language with ourselves. It's our own assessment of an area. And that was kind of what we were going for, was, what do you judge to be your best and your worst?
Yeah.
Not a
It wasn't
label
our choice.
we would necessarily apply. Suze Daka says, worst is the clearest opposite of best. Best encompasses so much. Same for worst. Worst, most challenging, trickiest, most hellish, hardest, most difficult, hairiest, last priority, most neglected, most forgotten or ignored.
Like hairiest out of
Hairiest is
that
fun. I say worst
list.
was best. I'm saving hairiest for a future t episode title. That's a
Okay.
good one. M reports, I finished my pantry. Now I'm working on my tornado shelter area and backing up
Oh,
computers.
okay. Yeah, I don't have a tornado shelter area to manage, so that's good. I can imagine that, like any kind of storage, any kind of extra room that's not in general use, that shelter could become a catch-all or a storage room by accident. And
Right.
then, it'll be full of stuff when you need it. When you need to get in there from a tornado and you go down there and there's a bunch of stuff in the way. So keeping that clear is probably a good thing for the family. You want to be able to get everybody in there quickly and without, throwing stuff outside. So good job.
Let's go on. We have a lot to talk about. This is an Ask Us Anything episode, so we're going to talk about lots of short topics. Did the pandemic change the rules for keeping clothes? What's a practical storage solution for a journal collection? And how does Ed's kitchen garden grow? We get a lot of questions and topic suggestions that aren't really meaty enough to warrant a whole show, but we still want to talk about them. So today we're going to see how many of those stockpiled questions we can answer. Let's get to it.
Whenever we put out a survey, the final question is basically, now you can ask us anything you want us to cover in a future episode. You all have asked some really good questions in our surveys, and we wanted the chance to answer some of them. So today we're covering 15 questions that you've asked in a wide variety of areas, and we hope you'll find them as interesting as we do. We're going to start off with the first one.
Okay, first question came from M, who asked, is it better to declutter unseen places or visible spaces first?
And my immediate response to M is, that's a trick question. First, either is fine to start with, unseen or visible spaces, but there are some things to consider. I always ask what space is bothering you the most, visible or not, and then we start there. That way you get some relief right away for something that's bugging you. But the visible spaces impact you and your family both and impact your willingness for friends and family to come over. So that might affect your choice or your response. And then on the other hand, if your unseen spaces are full, then nothing in the visible areas can be moved out to store elsewhere. So decluttering the unseen spaces first gives you storage space to take things from the visible areas when you then start working on them. If you see what I mean, like sometimes you just have to clear space in the storage before you can start decluttering the places that are visible. So, see what I mean? It's really a trick question. And the answer is that it depends on your specific situation and what serves you the best. And remember, I said in the beginning, either is fine and it's totally your call. So, listen to your own advice about what's getting under your skin the most and start there.
Okay, Callie asked, Callie wanted advice for those who journal. She writes, where do your clients who journal store their completed books? I have been journaling since 1979. I have considered choosing certain ones to shelve in a shorter bookcase in one of my extra bedrooms where I get dressed, no bed in there. The rest of the journals will remain tucked away in a downstairs closet, where they have been accumulating since 1995. I don't want to destroy or throw them away. I was just wondering if either of you have come across this issue and any possible solutions. I have over 100 completed journals of all sizes. Thank you both.
Surprisingly, you're not the first journaler I've met with a lifetime collection of journals to manage. I've had many clients with journal collections over the years. For those who like to write their thoughts down, I find they mostly have done it since early on in their life. They'll report to me, I started when I was a teenager, I started when I was 10, I started when I got into high school or college. Like it seems to be something that you pick up early in life, if that is a method of expressing yourself that you find comfortable and appealing. And so then the collection only grows over time. So first, note that it is your version of a collection to manage, and you need a plan for storage and or display just like any other collection. Second, you need to consider whether you want other people to be able to access them. I mean, do you want to store them out in the open or store them away from casual access? Third, do you have a disposal plan for after your lifetime? Do you want your family to be able to read them when they're gone, when you're gone, or do you consider them your private collection and you want them destroyed? So my storage ideas depend on your thoughts about your collection, but generally I suggest a bookcase if you live alone or you want easy access to them to reread them occasionally. After that, I suggest a banker's box with a lid. If you want them out of casual access and stored in the closet, but still a weight that can be picked up because a banker's box, when you go to buy a banker's box at Office Depot or Office Max, whatever, the supply store, those boxes are slightly smaller than a small moving box. So journals are usually books, and they're heavy. And so you don't want to make each individual storage container way too heavy to pick up. So I would go with a banker's box, and then they're also stackable, right? They have lids and they can be stacked. Some people will label the boxes for the time period so you can get to a specific time period if you want to reread something. And if you don't want anyone to read them, I suggest you mark them as journals, please destroy, or a similar message for your family. Not many journalers think about on the back end what's going to happen to all these when I'm gone. And do I really want my family to read some of the things that I've written in here? And so you might want to start thinking about a transition plan for your journals. And most people that have journal collections, your sense of privacy around the collection impacts whatever decisions that you make. And so if you feel like that other people can read them and you don't want them to, then you need to manage it against that risk. And if that's not really an issue for you, you live alone or you're not worried about somebody getting in your stuff, then it makes some of your choices a little bit easier. 100 journals is a lot of journals. It's going to take up a bookshelf. It's going to take up a bookcase to put them out. So just like any collection, I would try to mitigate displaying 100% of it if you can. And maybe you pull out some favorites that you read all the time, or ones that you like the book that it's in, you like the way that the book looks, and store some of the rest. Split the collection in half. And then, like I said, think about how you want these to be disposed of or handled after you're gone, so that you tell the family, don't read those journals. That's my private thoughts. Like you will have written things that maybe you don't want those people to read. So
Yeah.
give instructions about how you want them handled. And if you write on the box, these are journals just to store the whole box, then they don't have to make any decisions and they can just handle it. So it's really up to you about how you want to handle them.
Yeah. Deborah says, I burnt several of my journals because the point was for me to express myself personally, and my random vitriol doesn't necessarily need to be kept around to hurt others. A lot of my journaling is just the rants that I dump out of my brain first thing in the morning, so that
The
whatever's,
venting.
stuck in my craw doesn't bother me for the rest of the day. And I think it makes sense to not just label them as journals, please dispose, but maybe even write some more explicit instructions, write a letter to your family or something like that saying, hey, these boxes here labeled thusly are personal journals, and it is my wish that no one read these. I would like for them to be destroyed. But I'd also say, we know we're not going to be around forever, so maybe start that process yourself. Just like we encourage people to think about what their heirs or children or unlucky sibling or whoever, whoever gets stuck with dealing with your stuff, if you go unexpectedly, think about them now and maybe start culling the journals a little bit. Pick your favorite stuff that you do want to cherish and go back to, and let some of the rest go, maybe.
I think it's important. Well, and the estate job that I did later in her life, the mother had been taking notes in calendars, handheld calendar binders. And she wrote notes about conversations that she had with the kids and with other people. And the daughter, my client, was going through those calendars looking for data that she wanted to capture, like birth dates and that kind of stuff. And so she ended up going through all of the calendars of her mother and reading all the entries, and then getting her feelings hurt by some of the entries that were written there, because she documented and made comments about some of the conversations she had with her. And so she went away, hurt and mad in a couple of instances because she read something that I think the mother never intended for her to read. And once she read one, then she was like, oh, now I need to see what else she said. And so it sort of triggered in her the desire to see it all, to see how bad it got. It was very odd, her response, but she felt like since her mother had said one thing that seemed negative to her, that there might be others and she needed to see it. And so she sort of like poked herself a little bit by pursuing looking at all the details. And I felt bad for her because I'm sure that wasn't the mother's intent. And she did a lot of work in order to find the places where she felt bad. So it seemed like a project that wasn't good for her or good use of her time. but she could not be persuaded to stop. So I felt like she tortured herself a little bit there.
Yeah. Ginger says, I haven't kept all my journals. The ones I've kept are in a picnic hamper basket sitting beside my dresser, along with my photo trunk basket and my cards and letters basket, all stacked in a small tower.
Cool. That
And Na
works.
Naomi says, my mother's private correspondence could be divided into roughly two categories. One, stunningly banal and boring. Two, raised hurtful issues posthumously.
Oh, yeah. See, oh, yeah. And you don't have that. No one writes in their journal and thinks as they're writing, what is somebody going to think about this when they read it later? That's not the point of the journal, right?
I
Do
do.
you really?
Yeah. Sometimes I apologize in advance to posterity for some of the things I'm leaving behind as I'm writing.
I'm about to rant today. Please ignore this entry. Yeah. Okay. So I think that you have to, the purpose of the journal is, as Deborah said, it's very personal and it is thought processing. Like you're doing your own internal work, keeping a journal and creating your own historical database, processing your own emotions. And it's all about you. And so whatever you decide to do, think about it in such a way that I'm doing this in service to me, and I need to plan for the disposal on the back end. And come
Okay,
back and tell us how it goes.
couple more comments, and then we should move on. Barbara says, I destroyed mine a long time ago. Why take a chance that my disappointments would hurt my family's feelings? And
Yeah.
Paula says, nobody in my family journals, and knowing us, that's for the best.
True that. Smart, very smart.
Okay, next question was from Evelyn, who asked us to address the subject of clothes. Evelyn writes, people say if you haven't worn it in a year, it's safe to let it go. But a lot of my clothes haven't been worn for 2 or 3 years due to the pandemic, so this rule probably doesn't work. Also, fashion has changed a lot since before the pandemic. Many people have gained weight and might plan to get back to their pre-pandemic body. Gail, what do you think? Did the pandemic change the rules for how long you should hold on to clothes that you're not wearing?
We've talked about rules for decluttering before, and the pandemic in the meantime doesn't really affect this idea. The way that you've asked the question, it sounds like you're not wanting to follow that rule about clothes, like that rule isn't working for you right now. So don't follow that rule. Any decluttering rules are supposed to act as suggestions for parameters and cutoff points to help you make decisions about reducing any collection. And the bottom line for any collection, including clothes, is this. Does the collection take up too much space for your comfort and ease of using the space? If your closet's overstuffed and you can't put clothes away easily or find what you want when you're getting dressed, then it's time to reduce the collection. However you want to filter that collection is up to you. If you're happy with how your closet functions, then no worries about any decluttering rules. If you're not happy with the closet or your dressers or your armoires, then set your own rules about how to filter the contents. If that helps you, use a rule that helps you achieve your goal of a more functional closet.
I think that sounds great. I was gonna add that, in this area, a rule is only as good as the results you are getting from it. And
Yeah.
so if you take someone else's arbitrary rule, like you haven't worn it a year, then you should get rid of it. But that doesn't fit your lifestyle, your shopping habits, there are people who dress in a very classic style, and the thing they bought 20 years ago still works for them, still fits them, and they look great in it. I think Samudra's holding up four fingers. 40 years? 40 years.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, don't take on other people's rules if they don't work for you. Don't but
But
also,
set ones that do.
well, yeah, but also don't dismiss the idea of needing some rules, because if your stuff is growing beyond your ability to contain it, you obviously need some rules. So write your own.
To contain it or manage it, even if it fits in the closet, but it feels like it's too big of a management job, like it takes too much effort to maintain it and keep up with it, then it's another reason to make the collection smaller so that it's still within your capacity to manage.
The next question was from Jean, who asked, can you just let go of stuff and not run around trying to find a buyer or a home for it?
Love that question. If the one and only priority is getting stuff out of your space, then the answer is always going to be a very enthusiastic yes, let it go. But maybe you're weighing other values, like a desire to recoup the money you spent, or making sure that the item ends up in the hands of someone who can really use it and enjoy it. Or maybe you're concerned with making sure it doesn't end up in a landfill. You have to figure out how to balance your various priorities to arrive at the right answer for you. But make sure that you don't shortchange your own needs. If too much stuff is standing in the way of your having the life that you want, then getting rid of clutter can be an important act of self-care and a necessary choice to make. I am never going to tell somebody, you have to find the perfect place.
Right.
I'm never going to say that. So you can donate it as fast as you want, and you do not have to run around and find a buyer or a home for it. I give you permission. Do what you wish and reclaim your house in a way that feels comfortable for you.
Rowan commented, making money from this stuff is so much work.
Right? It really, really is, because you're not a store and you don't have a storefront. And every single item that needs to be sold requires interaction with at least one buyer, if not multiple buyers. And it takes a lot of activity to make something available online for a purchase. And oh my gosh, and you do all that work and then they pay you $5 or something. It's not.
Right. They pay you for $5 for something, and you still have to make a trip to the post office, or
You still have to
get,
meet them in a
you
parking lot
know,
or,
or
you
get
know.
UPS to come out and pick it up, or whatever. There are always some logistical hurdles.
Right? I said that a lot.
I think we try to encourage our audience to think of selling things as a very niche solution. Like, if you're a person who enjoys that, enjoys haunting Facebook Marketplace and eBay, enjoys putting up your postings and watching your auctions go, if you have fun with it, and you also succeed and make money, knock yourself out, sell as much stuff as you like. But that is not going to work for most of us who have a lot of better things to do than put a whole lot of effort into recouping 5% of what we spent on things, right?
Exactly.
I mean, because
Exactly.
wouldn't you say, I mean, in your experience, when people do sell stuff, I mean, somebody who's doing great might get back a quarter of their money.
And with a lot of work and a lot
Yeah.
of, fancy pictures and a lot of, all that stuff. Or they have a regular account at a resale store and they're constantly taking things up there and they have to do a lot of work to prep them to take let the resale store take them and have them be sold. And so, yeah, there's always some one or two things that you sell and make a bunch of money for, and a bunch of money in comparison to what you spent. Not, there's still not any comparison. It's usually way less than what you spent originally. And in the end, if you take that big amount of money and add it into the pool of all of the things that you've tried to sell, then the average amount per item and all the effort you make goes way down because there's one thing that makes good money and there's another 35 that don't. And so it is a way to spend a lot of time and not get paid really well per hour. So just it's if it's
Right,
worth
and
it
you
for you and you like you said, if you think it's fun, go for it. And if you don't twitch about it.
And your regular job is probably already a way to spend a lot of time not making enough money. So why would you want to add a part-time job to that? Jane
Exactly.
says, and think this is on the topic of letting things go. Jane says, during last weekend's declutter, the term was coined that it's not a cat. That meant that clutter isn't a loved one who needs a new home. It's just clutter.
I love that. It's not a cat. I don't have to find it a loving home. That
Right.
is excellent. Thank you for that visual. I like it.
Ginger says, I admit, last week I tossed a working electric toothbrush and four new and packaged brush heads. It just needed to go now, quick, before I changed my mind and kept it another 10 years.
There you go. And you know what? I'm sure that you have recycled and passed on and donated plenty of stuff in your life, and that one toothbrush and heads are not going to make a big dent in your collection of recycling things. So I wouldn't worry about it at all. And it sounds like you're not. So good. That's great.
Paul says, at this point, getting rid of stuff immediately is my priority. I don't worry about selling items or finding the perfect person to give things to. If I throw items into the river of stuff via thrift stores, they'll make their way to the right person.
There you go. I think that's what that's a good way to look at it. And keep going, because if you're in the mood and you are feeling the impetus to get things done, then don't let the ultimate destination get in your way.
Janice mentioned there used to be agents that would pack, ship, and sell your eBay stuff for a commission and ask, is there anything like that today? And I do not know.
No,
The
I'm
eBay
gonna.
stores went belly up, right? I mean, there was a
Yeah, I mean.
time when you could go to the eBay, go to an eBay store and hand over things to them to list
Yeah,
for you and all
but
that.
it what they couldn't nobody could make any money at it. They were trying to sell stuff and make money, and you wanted all the money. You didn't want to pay them any money, and so they got their, commission or fee or whatever, but it wasn't enough to make it worth them their while to do all the work. Imagine you don't feel like it's enough work when you get paid for the price of the item. Imagine the person that's listing it, it's going to get 10% of that price to do all the work. Like, it's not going to be worth it to them either. So it's they're that much farther removed from getting paid for the work. It was not worth the time and effort for the people that did it.
Okay, let's go on to our next question. This one was for me.
Yes.
JM, in response to our survey asking some gardening related questions, asked, as a cook, does Ed like growing anything in particular that he feels is essential? And I'm not going to go on and on at length. I'd love to have an enormous kitchen herb garden with everything under the sun in it, but I'm living in a rental and most of the dirt around our house seems to be like fill stuff that they put in because we're on the side of a hill, and so they just sort of, they built a backyard more or
Right,
less.
right, yeah.
And I don't want to put a lot of time and money into remediating, the crappy soil here to try and grow a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So, but I have a bay laurel tree that is priceless because I love some fresh bay laurel. And if I could only have one thing, like if I'm with in pots on the deck, I'll grow basil because in my opinion, basil is the thing where the fresh version and the dried version are most different. I mean,
Oh,
you
right.
cannot
Yeah.
like dry basil doesn't taste a thing like fresh basil, not even a
Yes,
little.
yes, yes, yes.
And then I guess my third priority would be cilantro because I like to put cilantro in just about everything.
Right.
I love some cilantro.
You also had a lavender on your list.
Lavender is really nice because you can just, pick it and leave it lying around drying on the counter and it'll make the whole house smell nice. I don't cook with it much. I mean, it's a traditional ingredient in Provençal cooking,
Right.
but I don't cook with it much.
There you
So,
go.
enough about that. An
Small kitchen
anonymous,
garden.
yes, an anonymous survey respondent said, I inherited a box of stuff that belonged to my sister, who was killed when she was 7. I was 3, and I really don't have any real memories of her. I have two sisters, but they want me to keep the box at the house that I inherited from my mom. It's like that with so much, and I feel guilty getting rid of anything. What do I do?
This is one of the downsides about inheriting your mother's house. To your sisters, it's still her house, not your house. So storing family memories there seems reasonable. But the truth is, it's now your house, not your mom's, and you have the right to set it up how you see fit. If you don't want to keep that stuff in the house, you can tell the sisters to rent a storage unit for what they want to keep. Any new person that would have bought your mom's house, if you didn't inherit it, would completely change how the house is set up, and you have the same rights as any new homeowner. You can do what you want. So I would ask the sisters if they want to have any furniture or keepsakes or photos or memorabilia because you want to set the house up as your own space. You can start by offering them what you don't want and ask them to remove those things if they want them. And then after you ask the sisters, then go to the sisters' children and see if they want something. And once you've offered and the family has taken what they want and you've kept what you want, the rest can be disposed of however you wish. Then you can start to sell or donate or whatever you want to do. You don't need to live in a shrine to your mother's life. So keep what you want and release the rest because it's your house now. And I think particularly if your mother has had lived in the house for a long time, so there's decades of inertia built into the house and how the things are laid out in the house. It takes a pretty strong act of rebellion to dismantle the way that it's set up for your mother and to lay it out the way that you want it. And your sisters will probably bark in the background about it, but everyone has to understand that you didn't inherit a shrine to your mother. You inherited a house that you now own and you can make your own. And so it may stir up some responses, but it's okay. Ask them if they want something, ask them to take stuff out that they want or to put in storage things that they want. And then you keep in the house what you want for your life. Don't just spend the next 20 years or 30 years living in your mother's house. And she would want you to do that too. That is my belief, that she would want you to make the house how you want it now that you have it and not live in a permanent shrine.
Yeah.
That's my response to that.
It's a tough one. And I sort of wonder why. I mean, I guess they maybe the sisters don't have the space of their own. She doesn't really.
Well, and the fact that it was about a sister that had died
Yeah.
as a young person, and she doesn't remember them, but the other sisters probably do remember the
Yeah.
sister that died. And so it makes me think that, well, they feel like they need to keep the memories of the sister, but they probably don't want to be poked with the sadness of it.
Yeah.
So they're trying to keep it at arm's length, but not surrender it.
Yeah,
It's like, well, you
and
can't make
make
the
her
other
the
sister
curator of the
be
collection.
You
Yeah.
can't make that sister be the one that has to suffer and deal with it. That's not appropriate. So, yeah, I mean, clearly they're not thinking very far out about the implications of what they're asking. And so, I think it warrants a discussion. And yeah, if you don't remember it, then it's like, okay, there's no point in me keeping these. And this is not your storage unit. This is my house. So if you want it, let's go rent a storage unit and let's put it in there because I don't want to live with it. I want to
Right.
have my own things here. And it's, you know, I'm not trying to be harsh about it. I'm just trying to be reflective of how the situation is for you. They're not thinking about this is now your home. You don't particularly want to interact or retain the things that they are feeling attached to. And so that means that it's a keepsake to them and it's not a keepsake to you. And you have the right to say, I don't want to live with your keepsakes. You live with your keepsakes. You take them or you go put them in storage if you don't want them in your house. And you're entitled to say that as the person who is now the owner of the home.
Another anonymous survey respondent asked, How do I get past thinking I need to find the perfect place to donate stuff to? I keep thinking women's shelters or anywhere kids end up and would like toys. I get hung up on worrying they will reject my donation.
So the short answer to this is perfect doesn't exist. There's no perfect place to donate anything. There are places that will likely use or sell most of your donation, but the perfect place to donate only exists in our mind as a way to comfort us about giving things away. There is no guarantee that whoever you take the stuff to will use it all or sell it all or need it all. No organization can promise that ever. So as you give away, you have to trust that some of the things will get used and some will end up being trashed, and you have no control over that outcome whatsoever. The best you can do is put it out on the river of stuff, let it drift, and maybe find a new use in the world. Keeping only what makes your house a landfill, keeping it only makes your house a landfill instead. You don't need to do that. Release it and reclaim your space for your own use and your own pleasure. And let the release things find their way to their next life. And that is a good enough effort on your part. Pick a place where you like their mission and that they have asked for your type of goods, and then donate there regularly and let the worry go. That's truly my advice about it. There is no perfect place to donate stuff.
Leah wants to know, should boxes from purchases be kept? And if so, how long should they be kept? Over the years, I have kept the boxes for things like slow cooker, air fryer, computer. They do take up space, but for small appliances, I put them back into the box when they are not in use.
Personally, I find it harder to store the objects in their boxes than not in their boxes, but it's a personal preference of mine. The appliance boxes make the object to store bigger because it's got mold that, styrofoam that it
Padding,
fits
right.
into or whatever, and the box is bigger than the object, and so it takes up more space. But aside from that comment, you don't need to keep the boxes at all beyond the first few weeks, in case you want to return the item when you first buy it. And then after, you sure don't need to use those boxes if you move. You can pack appliances in regular moving boxes, so the specialty boxes aren't needed. If you consider the object is fragile and the original box has special packing to protect it, then maybe. But still, you're using valuable storage space in a closet or the garage or a storage unit to hold empty boxes. And that is a big waste of prime storage space in your house. Every box takes up space, so something else can't go there. So it's not the most efficient use of the home storage. I would err on the side of giving the box, recycling the box after whatever I've used it 3 times, I've used it for 3 weeks, I've used it for 3 months, whatever your cutoff is where you'll declare
You
that
know
I'm
you're
not
not
going to
going to
return
return
this
it.
now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then go and throw the box out. You don't really need to have a collection of boxes, of specific boxes for specific items. Boxes make a big collection and they take up a lot of space. And so you look at that box and ask yourself, am I willing to give up the storage space for this box and not be able to use it for something else in the house? That storage space for something else in the house. And however you answer that question is the answer to this conundrum.
Craig asked, do Gail's clients tend to maintain the organization after she leaves?
Everybody wants to know that. I would say that some do and some don't. Some of my clients just need me to help them cope with their spaces. They call me because they don't have the skill set or the mindset to do it without my support. Others get the project done with my help and then can maintain it just fine. They call me occasionally for resetting it again later. Generally, though, almost all of my clients lower their tolerance threshold. So once we've worked on a space, they get disturbed sooner rather than later and call me in to help before it ever gets to the level that we started with. And that's the most universal thing I can say about working with people is we dial it down, and then when it starts to creep back, they get alarmed much earlier than they did the first time. And that means it's not as big of a mess to clean up the second round.
An anonymous respondent asked, how to declutter and right-size the current home when you expect to separate permanently from spouse in about 4 years, as soon as the last child is grown and gone. Garage contains furniture, which I imagine I will need, housewares, etc. garage is so full that we can't park cars in there. Yet I imagine I might not be able to afford the repurchase of items stored in garage when the time comes to move into my own place. Hanging on to all of these things is draining, however, and prevents proper use of the space right now.
This is so fascinating because I have had this experience with a client. Actually, I was there to, the husband didn't know it. I was there to help the wife finish all the projects in the house and go through all the things and hang stuff up and get through the graduation of the son before she moved out. And so it was a very strange focus of a job. So in this particular question, you have a plan with a longer timeline. And so I would consider a storage unit. Then you can make the garage a project with the goal to use the garage and park the cars inside. That way you can go through everything now, identify what you think you'll use in a new place, and transfer that stuff to storage. And it goes there now so you can park the cars in the garage. The rest can be donated or trashed as you need to. And then you're paying for storage for a few years, but it will give you your garage back now while keeping those things that you'll need later. And once you leave, you can empty the storage unit and be out of there. It might make moving out easier too if you transfer into storage during the next few years other memorabilia or keepsakes or personal items that you know you want to take with you. Sorting through things and making item separations happen while you're not under major drama or pressure makes the process of leaving a little bit smoother. And sometimes we have to plan for changes in our life, and this is one of those instances. And so I think while typically I wouldn't recommend having a storage unit for 4 years, this makes sense in terms of meeting your unstated goal that you want to have access to this furniture later in the future. And you want to be able to park in the garage now and not find the garage to be overwhelming. So take some stuff to storage and get through the garage and clear it out and get rid of the rest. That's my advice.
Okay, that's a tough one. That's a
I know,
difficult
right?
question. And
But it is, a circumstance that happens for people.
yeah, and he or she is, it was anonymous, so we don't
Right,
know.
true.
But so we don't know whether the spouse is in on this plan, or this is, a plan that the respondent was taking on all by himself or herself. But it's tough. Okay, got to go fast because we're running out of time. What do you think of the cubby type organization versus dressers?
So cubbies work, but you still have cubes that go into the cubby holes to hold stuff. Those cubes are soft-sided, so they don't move as easily when they're pulled out because they can lose their shape a little. And if you don't use containers in the cubbies, then the piles of belongings can look messy in the cubbies and possibly fall out easier when things go in or out. And depending on how anal you are about folding things to look uniform or neat, can affect how that cubby populated without cubes would look. And things like socks are for sure going to fall out without if you don't use some kind of cube. So in my experiences, cubbies might work for kids' toys, but they're not as useful for clothing. And in that situation, a unit with drawers is a better bet.
Pat mentions banker's boxes fit in cubbies, but that still might not be the most attractive solution.
Yeah,
For
you're gonna balance the aesthetics of it versus the functionality of it for sure, to meet your own taste.
to me, they always, even when they're done fairly well, we're talking about like a, like a IKEA Billy bookcase or something like that. The thing that have
The
square,
squares.
cubicle slots of uniform size that you can get baskets and bins to fit into. But to me, they always look, even when they're done well, they still look a little cluttery. But I like a really simple landscape,
Right. Well, and they're very, they have the idea of everything's out in the open
Right.
going for it, which some people like and some people will hate. So it's definitely a personal preference thing.
Okay. Doreen asked, Gail, how do you work around someone wanting to work with you, but really is afraid of the change and letting go? Like me and my papers, I have so many treasures. You say sort, then thin the herd. What do you do when you get total resistance? How do you work through that with a client?
That's a good question. Total resistance is a challenge for both of us, but change can still happen. All the papers are not the same, and they're not being kept for the same reasons and do not have the same uses to you. So I end up talking to the client about the various categories one at a time. Some categories just can't be given up, and so we discuss appropriate storage. Some categories are historical data in nature, like supporting a tax return or some other data use. We would talk through the need for that data and determine if there's a comfortable cutoff or a parameter that allows release of that type of paper in the future. Some of the paper is for action items, and so we discuss capturing those things in an action item system. Some is calendar related, and so we discuss how the client keeps their calendar. You get the idea here. Once the sort is done, then each pile is a discussion about why you've kept it and how you're going to use it. And what you believe about the need to keep it. We tease that apart and find solutions that way. That type of client may not release as much as a less reluctant client, but often they find that they can release more than they expected if we talk about it in that way.
So it's about gently overcoming objections.
By type of paper. Exactly. And I'm pretty good at it, let me just say. I've thinned some people's herds before, and I can talk you out of some paper if I think it's not necessary. And I will if you declare it's got to stay no matter what, then I will say back to you, okay, and we have to find a way to store that and keep it here, and we will talk about storage solutions. So it's totally up to the client ultimately, but I can usually coach people through once they've done the sort based on the type of paper and how, because the reasons that each of those piles are there is different and why they're retaining the paper is different. So we just
Now,
talk through the reasons.
l looking beyond the paper focus of the co that was in the question, you don't really get total resistance from clients. You never have a client who just doesn't want to
Oh,
part with
yes, I
anything,
do.
do you?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Now, is
Yes, I
that are
do.
these people? These are people who have they've reached the point of accepting that they want to hire you to work,
Yeah.
but they're not ready to let go of anything.
And they've jumped the gun.
Oh,
Like
gotcha.
somehow they feel like an organizer is going to come and magically make it all work without regard to the realities of the situation or the space or the volume or the capacity of the like. They think that all of the rules will disappear if the organizer shows up and it will all work. And then I show up and that of course is not the truth. And then they're surprised and then they don't call me back again.
Ah.
But sometimes people jump the gun for themselves. Like they feel like they should be ready for one. And then when faced with reality, they're not actually ready for one. And so they have to go away and send me away and mull it over some more later.
And then, are there people who may not be ready to work on their big problem, but you see some other way in, some other way to get started?
Because everybody's resistance is usually gradation of around the room depending on what kind of stuff you're looking at. And so if you're super resistant about this type of stuff, but maybe you don't care about the kitchen, you're not as invested in the kitchen, and we can go in the kitchen and make some headway there. Yeah, I will definitely try to, okay, if not A, then B, if not B, then C, and see if I can be helpful in some area for them. And sometimes it works. But I have had some clients who are like, oh yeah, this is hard. I don't like this. Go away. Like they thought it would be okay, and they thought I would have some kind of magic wand to make it all fit. And when they realize that I cannot change the laws of physics and make a space infinitely larger, then they're surprised and they send me home.
We have two more that we have to get to. So Nathaniel asked, what advice would you go back and tell your younger self about buying things and clutter? I know I wish I'd been warned about collecting things.
When you're young, the need to have stuff seems very, very urgent. And then later you realize it almost never really is urgent at all. The truth is, we have less financial literacy as a young person, and we don't always understand the long-term effects of using a credit card to instantly buy the thing we're drawn to. We create storage and management issues in our homes because we collect, and we almost always create a negative financial consequence by giving in to the desire to collect quickly and beyond our current means. So the advice I give to a younger person, don't buy beyond your means just because you have credit capacity. It'll cost way more than the price you pay with interest while you're trying to pay it off. Also, notice the impact those things have on the state of the house and see the effects of ownership of an ever-growing collection. At some point, the collection will outstrip the space, and then you have an urgent problem to manage that is in no way fun for you. That's my advice.
Okay. Last question. Connie asked, when you go to other people's homes as a friend or relative and they have a different or weird way, that's her word, weird way of storing or displaying something than what you are used to, do you one, say something to give advice? Two, just think of ways to make it better and not say anything? Three, use idea at home yourself?
I never give unsolicited advice to my friends. No. Sometimes friends feel a little awkward having me in the house. They're assuming that I'm judging their spaces, which I'm not, but their own feelings still assume that I am sometimes. If they show me something they've done, I'll admire it. If they ask me for advice, I'll give some. But generally, I try to leave my professional life at the door. I'm there to take a break too and spend time with my friends. And several friends have hired me to come help them with spaces they needed clearing out. So then it's an appointment. And for that time slot, they are my client and I have my professional hat on. Then they get treated like any client and I do my best for them. I've gotten to work in a few of my friends' beady craft rooms. So that is some extra fun for me. But like anyone with their friends, I want to go and hang out with my friends and have fun and enjoy their company and not be in professional mode. And so generally, I don't share my advice unless they ask.
Okay, and to be clear, Gail was talking about her metaphorical professional hat. She doesn't actually wear a hat while
Yes.
she's decluttering
There's
with
not
you.
a clutter-free crown that
She
goes on
does
my
have
head.
some very snappy scrubs, though.
I do.
Okay, we are out of time, so I'm just going to remind everybody that we'll be back next week. That is May 7th at the usual time. Live in Zoom and streaming on Facebook. And we're going to return to the topic of downsizing. We've had lots of interesting questions about downsizing. So we're going to talk about the various situations that may lead you to downsize and some strategies for planning and preparing for your downsize.
When it's time to go.
Why don't you give us the weekly tittle?
Okay, this week's tittle is called A Note to Self. This week's assignment is to offer a word of decluttering advice to your younger self. Reflect on things that you understand now about stuff, clutter, collecting, shopping, housekeeping, money, and related topics that you probably didn't grasp fully when you were younger. Write a note or a letter to your younger version of yourself and offer a piece of advice that you think he or she might have found helpful to avoid the clutter struggles that you've experienced. And try to be kind and gentle and forgiving. It's not for you. Don't be yelling. An optional assignment would be consider discarding, donating, or gifting an item in honor of that younger you and or in celebration of your older, wiser self. So let's give ourselves some advice and see what you would say to your younger self now. And come back and tell us about it next week.
If you're watching this on YouTube, we would love for you to join us live. To get notifications about upcoming events, we invite you to join the meetup group by visiting cfhou.com/meetup. You can also follow us on Facebook by visiting cfhou.com/Facebook, or join our mailing list by visiting cfhou.com/subscribe. We love to hear from you, so please keep your questions, comments, and topic suggestions coming on YouTube, Facebook, or anywhere that you find us. You can always reach us through our website at clutterfairhouston.com.
Thanks for joining us. I hope you enjoyed all of your the small question collection. It was fun for me to write because it was popping all over the place. I really enjoyed answering them. I hope you got some good advice out of it, and we will talk to you guys next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.